From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to a Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, July 13th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish Hawa for joining the conversation. On today's show, we'll get details on an upcoming voice workshop for middle school youth to find the power of their voice. It will be taught by Perseverance Theater Artistic Director Leslie Ishii. A preview of this weekend's Heart of the Wetlands Walk with Southeast Alaska Land Trust and Discovery Southeast, and a sneak peek with a few of the actors of Twelfth Night, starting performances next week as part of the Alaska Theater Festival. Those conversations, Sounds Wild, Star Party, music, and more, coming up this hour on a Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anakaya ha ani kak gunish cheesh.
Ding dong, call me on my phone, nice tea, and I'll get my ping pong. This is dead heavy, can't hit a baseball.
A little BTS to kick off Juno Afternoon. You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno and 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Are you ready to practice confidence in your voice and learn to speak assertively? Do you want to sing, tell stories, and have fun? Well, then join the transformative Find Your Voice workshop and embark on a journey of self-expression and personal growth. It's part of an upcoming workshop from a partnership with the Juno Public Library, the Friends of the Juno Public Library, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and Perseverance Theater. The course is designed for middle school youth, and it is free to attend. It happens Friday, July 21st and Friday, July 28th, and is being taught by the one and only Leslie Ishii, who joins me now live in Studio 2K. Gunath Chish for being here today. Leslie.
Hi, Boston. Thanks so much for having me. Gunath Chish.
Of course. Yes, and you are the Artistic Director of Perseverance Theater. And just a note, we'll have you back on next week. We're going to get a deep reveal of the upcoming season. But today, we are here to talk about this voice workshop. It sounds like important and impactful. How did this workshop come about?
Well, I had a wonderful conversation with Phil Shupshin over at the JAC.
Yes.
And we've been wanting to figure out how we can collaborate. And also, I'll be honest, Perseverance Theater, we're all the way out on Douglas, and we're so grateful our patrons come all the way out there. And then our Douglasites support and attend Perseverance Theater. But we kept thinking, how can we have more of a presence in the Valley? Mm. And Phil's collaboration idea about this voice workshop, because we know our young folks hang out at the library during the summer.
Sure.
Maybe we could be of service and support them to have some kind of programming and bring some voice work and some wonderful empowerment for them.
That's awesome. Right, so I know that the focus of the workshop, it says it's on middle school youth. Why that particular age?
Well, a couple of things from my point of view as the instructor. I love that age because we get to play, we get to express and expand how we express ourselves, and we don't have any idea yet. And we probably had some input by them for sure, but we're still open to what is expression, what is your voice, as opposed to saying this is how you correctly do something.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, as we get on, if we don't have that creative input early on, then we get a lot of ideas implanted and conditioned into us as we get older.
So it's like a prime age to sort of, when you're exploring, you're trying to figure out who you are as, you know, what is that, like 12, 13 years old, somewhere in there?
Yeah. So I love that time when we still play and can discover so many things.
Right.
And give them a new pathway forward that, you know, includes that sense of creativity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I know you have a long background in voice work. I know a lot of your theater work is grounded in this. What first drew you to that particular side of the theater or the body and all of that? What is it about voice work that sort of got you?
That's a great question. Oh my gosh. Well, you probably can't tell now, but I was one of those really shy kids in school. Very early on. I'm the kid, and look, I grew up in Seattle, so it was rainy, so you wore a coat, but I'm the kid that never took their coat off all day long in school. That kind of shy, really kind of, I don't know what to say. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And I grew up and still am slightly dyslexic. So it was some challenges there. So when I finally figured out I could be a musician and my great aunt was a pioneer of modern dance, I could move and express myself through music and through movement that I didn't always have to speak. That started to help me build confidence to eventually speak. And as you know, I became an actor and now a director.
Right, right.
So I think it was that progression of how I figured out to learn to express myself in various ways that helped me figure out, oh, voice. Oh my gosh, I can come to it and I can have a voice. I can be heard. I can be seen. I can work in a group. You know, right, I can collaborate. And it was cool to collaborate in a theater piece, right? And so that's, I think, what got me around voice. And at that time, as I was training to be a director, and I didn't go to grad school for directing. I went to grad school for acting, but eventually moved into directing. I had gotten a certification in voice. In fact, I came here years ago to teach in the ASTI program. And I taught voice because I was on to... and Art Roach was wonderful in recognizing I was onto a different way of approaching it. So folks could open up, be in charge of their voice, find their own confidence and discover the range of their expression and how I wasn't there to change them to sound correct. In fact, you know, in the, you know this, Boston, in the American theater, they used to train us that the American standard version of English, that dialect.
Right.
Made if you could do it really well, you were a good actor.
Yeah.
When I thought, but people talk all different kinds of ways, have accents, dialect,
different backgrounds,
lived experience,
cultures.
Totally.
Yeah.
I thought, why are we making it one particular thing makes us a good actor? So I started just to explore that in voice and open that up. And it just, I think, really informed how I direct and how I approach our theater making work.
Okay, that's awesome. So for the parents or for the youth who are listening, this is for middle school youth. So what kinds of things will participants discover in this workshop?
Yeah, well, first of all, we'll start with a warm-up that they'll have input on, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to feel that they're creating a good warm-up that they can take with them. So that if they're working on a school project or they want to loosen up and they know they have to maybe speak for some reason, they can find ways to build their confidence and even practice at home. Much like when you're learning an instrument, you need to practice the fingerings or have enough breath to make a good sound. We'll learn those things for speaking. And then they'll have a good practice routine to take with them.
I see.
And there's theater games that go with it. So we'll have some fun as a group too. Then I like to approach things about them getting to know who they are themselves. And so we'll draw and we'll get to express ourselves on paper too. Some folks come to learning what they think and feel first by drawing or writing about it. And then maybe they work towards actually speaking about it. So we'll do some fun artistic, creative, exercises or activities.
So it's sort of about
to get there.
So it's not just finding your voice physically, which can be helpful. And this doesn't necessarily have to be for theater kids or kids who are interested in theater, but maybe you have to do a school report or you have to be in front of the class and you get nervous and these techniques and exercises can help you with that. But it's also, it sounds like it's about, you say drawing and you put voice together with drawing, but it's like, well, maybe that's about finding the inner voice. Like
that's
what
right.
is it that who you are and what you're trying to express and doing that through all these different ways that you're going to explore in this workshop.
Yeah. Oh. We'll even explore from who you are to what do you care about? Because sometimes that's when we really want to speak. Because we want to share something that we really care about. We care about that, right?
Yeah.
Or find ways to express our passion. So it's a little bit of a broad swath, but I think it's a way to support folks who approach it differently. Our young folks
can
have a number of ways to come at it.
And I know you do a lot of work with breath and breathing. And all of that, which I think gets you in tune with your body, right?
Totally. We'll stretch, we'll breathe. Look, we have some of the best air on the planet. I love breathing deep here on Klinkin' on E. Mm-hmm. And just what a pleasure it is to just stretch and breathe and open up and come together as a group. So yeah, we'll work on that as well. It's just good. It's just healthy.
Let's see if it can transfer over the radio. I don't know, but can sure. we do a breathing exercise? Can we give a tip to people out there? Like, what could we do to get centered in our breath?
Thank you. I would love that.
Let's try it.
That would be a true honor. Well, I would say I often start groups this way anyway. You know this from rehearsal. Just find your feet to the floor and where you're mm-hmm. comfortable so you're not tense or something, but you're kind of relaxed and centered so you can just find a moment here just to center yourself.
Often you have people close their eyes, right? Some people do, some people don't.
Mm-hmm. You can soften your gaze or, you can close your eyes. And then just find your own rhythm of breath. Sometimes we have to, get in tune with the fast rhythm at work or and your family or having dinner and everyone's rushing to get things ready or get ready for school. See if you can just slow down a little and find your own rhythm for a few moments. Yeah. And then I invite us to all just take a collective breath together and three, we'll breathe in and then we'll breathe out for three counts. Mm-hmm. So breathing in, two, three, and hold for a moment and exhale. One, two, three. And just know that one's for you.
Yeah.
And then let's breathe in again, three counts in. One, two, three. And exhale, two, three. And that's for you and for your community. Yeah, your family, your immediate group of friends. And let's breathe in one more time, breathing in one, two, three. And exhale, two, three. And that's for all the communities that we're in service of as we're here on Klinkin' on E together, making the best community and environment we can for each other, with each other.
I'm cozy now. I'm so cozy. Yeah. That's always so good. Just take a couple breaths, right? And think about who you're taking a breath for. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. Yeah, that's really nice. And this workshop, I also wanted to mention, because I know it's a note in the description of it, that this is going to be a safe space to work without judgment. And it's full of fun and discovery in being that safe place, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's how we roll.
That's how we roll. So is there another idea of sort of a game that you might play on that day? What kind of games will you play? What kind of theater games?
Mm-hmm. There's lots of theater games where you make sounds and pass a sound ball or pass the energy through some kind of expression. And we can work it around a circle with the ensemble, the group that forms. And there's a lot of games around articulation. So you just make sounds and get all of the muscles and your mouth and everything going so that you can get practice really making sounds, but as much putting breath with that.
Right.
Most people don't think about this, of course, but you need breath to make the sounds. Otherwise, it's like asking a piano player to play the piano without their hands.
Mm.
So you need plenty of breath to help you make the sounds. And then we put different sounds together, of course, to make meaning, right? So there's fun games where we don't have to worry about the words and what we say, where we just do gibberish.
Right.
Like you and I can practice right now. We'll make sounds like just warm up a little. And then we'll have a conversation in gibberish. We'll make up our own language.
Oh, my goodness.
So like, oh, vzvata pa pa pa.
Yaba zabada.
No, zavaba.
Sawa.
Oh, zavataba. Oh, the pita.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
So we'll play fun games like
That's good. That's really fun. And I want to make sure we mention this, that the workshop is free.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but you have to register. Is there a limited amount of space for the workshop?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
And also, if you have a parent, a guardian, an auntie or uncle with you at the library, they're invited to join us.
Oh, okay, yeah. Great. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know the best place to find out about registering again, this is targeted at middle school, but you're saying yes. there might be other people who could join along, or if you bring along an auntie or a parent, maybe they join in. They don't have to necessarily sit on the sidelines. Right. Like, they can participate as well. Registration is required. This starts next Friday, the 21st, and the link is available. It'll be available on our show webpage for this episode, but it's also available via Facebook by searching for the Juno Arts and Humanities Facebook page. And there's an event on there called Voice Workshop, and that'll link you to an Airtable where you enter in your information and you let them know that you're going to be attending this workshop. And you get to experience this workshop with the wonderful Leslie Ishii, Artistic Director of Perseverance Theater. Thank you so much, Leslie. And we'll see you next week for a sneak peek at next Perseverance Theater season.
I can't wait. Goodness, geez, thanks for having me, Boston.
Geez.
Really an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Up next, the Heart of the Wetlands Walk is this weekend. We'll get a preview from Discovery Southeast and Southeast Alaska Land Trust after the break. But first, here is Sounds Wild. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. It's a minus tide on a rocky Alaska beach, and a big striking sea star is inching through a tide pool. It's moving pretty fast for a sea star. It has 24 legs and is almost 3 feet across. It's a Pycnopodia, known to many as the sunflower sea star. Sunflower sea stars are distinctive and colorful creatures found from Baja California to Alaska's Aleutian Islands. They are a keystone species in the marine environment. Their favorite food is sea urchins, and by eating urchins, which feed heavily on kelp, sunflower sea stars protect kelp forests that support numerous other species, including many of commercial significance in Alaska. In recent years, culminating in the early 2020s, sea star wasting syndrome killed a variety of sea star species on the West Coast. And sunflower sea stars were particularly hard hit. About 90% of the sunflower sea stars off the coast of California, Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia were killed. Unusually warm water in the Pacific coincided with the disease outbreak. Biologists are working to learn more about the disease and to monitor the recovery of sea stars along the Pacific coast. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwam. The Glenadee have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life. For today, and for future generations. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Saturday, you can join along with a couple of Juno's favorite naturalists from Discovery Southeast and the Southeast Alaska Land Trust team for a muddy, bog-filled, but fun walk through conserved wetlands on North Douglas Island. That's this Saturday, July 15th from noon to 4 p.m. Here to chat about it are Margaret Custer from the Land Trust and Richard Karstensen from Discovery Southeast, along with Steve Murley from Discovery Southeast. Good to see you all being here today. Hi.
Hi.
It's good to have you here. Okay, so this walk, is this a yearly walk that we do?
It's become a yearly walk.
It's become a yearly. Yes. So it's kind of becoming a tradition.
It is becoming a tradition, and we hope to continue that. We do it at a different location every year at this point. That wasn't the intent when we started out.
But okay.
We've found that that's really fun to rotate to different wetland properties to showcase all of Juneau.
Oh, nice. That's really cool. And the walk is 3 to 4 hours or so on. So you sign up and you are on for the whole time, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So any participant should plan to be out for 4 hours and, you know, bring water and refreshments that they need for that time.
We'll remind everybody about that at the end as well, because that's true. So what exactly is the Heart of the Wetlands Walk? How do we describe that? Why is that the title?
Well, it's called the Heart of the Wetlands because it's on the Heart Subshed, which is an informal name given by Richard to the area also known as Hendrickson Point by some people.
Okay.
But it's a heart-shaped lobe or peninsula off of North Douglas that has some really wonderful features. It's a wetland area. Half of it is a conservation area owned by CBJ, and that's on the western half. And the eastern half is some smaller parcels, 27 acres of which the land trust has conserved.
Right. Okay. Now, let's just get a sense of what the land trust does, because some people may not know that. The Southeast Alaska Land Trust. What do you all do?
Well, we are a land trust for the region from Ketchikan to Yakutat, and we have 42 conservation properties in Haines, Cake, Sitka, Petersburg, Excursion Inlet, Admiralty Island, and Juneau.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. What does it mean to be a land, to have trust, have land trust? What does that mean?
So a land trust is a private conservation organization. We're nonprofits set up to conserve land with private landowners, usually. Some public lands can be involved in land trusts. But usually with private landowners, we work to preserve conservation values on properties. So conservation values might be like salmon habitat, bird habitat, recreation and open space, scenic values, wetland and watershed functions, things like that, that are preserved in perpetuity with a land trust.
I see. Okay. So do people will their land to the trust?
They can. We can accept titles of land, as well as entering into conservation easements with landowners who want to continue to own and use their properties.
I see. Okay. All right, cool. And the Discovery Southeast, you all are involved in education and all kinds of things that go on with nature here in Juneau, right? Can you give us a little brief overview of what Discovery Southeast involves?
Well, from my perspective, I've been working mainly with intermediate grade school kids, third, fourth, and fifth. And mainly it's about exploring and sort of shaping curiosity for being outside to see what is there beyond the human construct. Like when I take kids out, say, at Glacier Valley under thunder, it's all about moving around in that landscape to begin to understand how that landscape got formed in the first place.
Oh, okay.
And the kind of life forms that have congregated on that landscape since. And some of that's just learning how to travel in there and have your attention in a particular place or way. So these are outings that are really helpful for kids just to get out of the construct of school into forests and wetlands.
Or get off the computer and the phones.
And get away
from
get in touch with nature a little bit, right? The screens, get away from the dialogue and have a relationship, have some kind of meaningful relationship with the place they're standing and walking through. And
that's pretty cool.
And even getting off of the trail. We find that when kids or adults are on trails in groups, they divide up into little buddy systems and they're talking about everything but what's around them. And what, the minute we step off the trail, you got to pay attention.
You got to be aware, right?
Yeah. And that's what we're going to do with adults on this weekend.
That's awesome. I also want to mention that, Richard, you have a great subdomain at Discovery Southeast, junonature.discoverysoutheast.org. And I was checking that website out, and man, there's a lot of information on there. And I know you both are really well-known naturalists, naturists, and that is a great place to go if you have questions about pretty much anything that has to do with Juno or the outdoors, right? I mean, there's some great information on there.
Thank you. That's a great plug.
Yeah, absolutely. and so, like you said, this weekend, the Heart of the Wetlands. Now, this is more geared towards adults, although kids are welcome. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you have to be willing to spend 3 to 4 hours in some muggy, boggy mess. Is that right?
We have a bushwhacking difficulty rating of 1 through 10. 1 would be like walking along on a sidewalk, and 10 is suicidal. So no living human has ever done 10.
Okay. And
on this walk, I would say
we're at an eight. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
it's going to average D2 to D4, like very easy. But we always like to take people through a little D6.
I see.
When you've been a few minutes in D6 and you come home, you're going to find at least 3 hemlock needles in your underwear. That's the definition of D6.
That's the definition of D6. Okay. That sounds really good. So be prepared, right? And this is something that I think we need to do anytime we're going out in nature. But I know you recommend wearing some high boots, right? If you're going to participate in this, make sure you bring your own snacks, your own water. And what's the weather? What are we forecasted to be like on Saturday? Do we know?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Okay. Yeah. And this part, is this hike part of a series of hikes? I know you're doing a couple other things this summer. Is this like a summer activity that we have different ones throughout different months?
Well, there's the whole program for kids that Steve could talk about. But as far as these walks for adults, this is the 3rd annual Discovery Seal Trust joint members walk.
And we want to mention this. There's no charge for this.
Right. It's completely free. You just have to register ahead of time.
I mean, you can donate because these are both nonprofit organizations that could, you know, would welcome your donations. But you can go on this walk at no cost.
Yeah. And there's exceptional bird watching on Hendrickson Point or the Heart Subshed. And so folks who are interested in bird viewing, wildlife viewing, they saw some tracks out there this week, a couple days ago. So there could be some good opportunities to take photos and use binoculars. And
oh, bring your binoculars, right?
Binoculars, yeah.
So we'll see birds and things. What else will we experience on this walk, Richard?
Besides
nettles in our underpants.
Hemlock needles. We think there's cultural sites around the perimeter of this beach. So there could well be nettles that are remnant from old fish camps. But the thing that really stands out about this little section of Sayaic, northern Douglas Island, is access for large mobile animals like deer, bear, and wolf.
Mm.
If you think of the refuge and the greater wetlands that surround it between Sayaic and the mainland, it's completely blocked off to wildlife by expressways and development, with just one or two exceptions. One is a place that Seal Trust has a lot of activity on over on the Mendenhall Peninsula side, and another is this bulge out into the channel that we're calling the heart. When we explored it 2 days ago, we found not a single human footprint out there, which is amazing when you think of the amount of human presence in Sitka, the Gessner Channel.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And so safe access for these large mammals to the refuge where they can feed and spread out is really important. So for deer, bear, wolf, and a lot of other mammals that you've documented out there.
Is it possible to run into some of these wild creatures? Are we prepared for that?
They're pretty good at staying out of our way. I wouldn't be at all shocked to see a deer, but bear and wolf are pretty, especially in the daytime.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be really surprised to see them.
Now, this is the registration is free, but there is limited space, right? So how many people are we going to be able to take on this walk?
Yes, we have 10 spots left.
Oh.
So anybody who wants to register today should be able to get in on it. And you can do so on our website at southeastalaskalandtrust.org. And there's a link on the homepage for that under events. And we just have 10 spots left of about 33 total people going out for this.
Okay. And how does it work? What are they going to do on Saturday to get to do this?
So the participants will meet at the Whale Statue at Overstreet Park, and we'll take Discovery Southeast shuttle vans to North Douglas just to reduce congestion and parking issues on North Douglas. Because even though this is a public access area, there's no like designated parking or restrooms or anything like that at the Hart subshed. So that's why we're going to meet at the Whale Statue first and shuttle over.
So you're going to drive all the way out North Douglas, right? To the
it's
end
about
of the...
5 miles.
Oh, okay.
So it's about 5 miles north.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Cause I know if you go all the way out, where is that? The Rainforest Trail, right? Mm-hmm. And then I didn't know if you were going around that end or, okay. I see. All right. Yeah. That's really cool. This sounds like a really fascinating journey for people to take. And this is, like we said, it's geared towards adults, but kids can go. But I want to let Steve mention real quick about the youth programs. If there's parents out there who want to get their kids off the computer and outside this summer, are there things that they can do?
Well, there is certainly summer camp going on, but I think most of those are probably full.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Already done. And so they're underway.
So look for next summer, perhaps, or are there things coming up in the fall too?
Well, it's back in school.
Okay. So. And that's mostly, then you do that through the school system, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
That's right.
Because I know you guys are a real good partner with Juneau School District.
Yeah. And also with when there's days off or there's like parent-teacher conferences, we do things in that way as well. We take kids out for a whole day or something like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. It's the Heart of the Wetlands Walk. It's this Saturday, July 15th from 12 to 4 p.m. It's an exclusive naturalist guided hike through a pristine heart-shaped peninsula on North Douglas. I love your language for that. Participants will again meet at Overton Park at 12 p.m. and take shuttle vans out to the hike. But you have to register, and the site to do that on is southeastalaskalandtrust.org. And don't forget to visit also discoverysoutheast.org to learn all about it. And, of course, Richard's subdomain on there, junonature.discoverysoutheast.org. It is such a pleasure. Richard, Margaret, and Steve, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Gunnath Jeesh.
Gunnath Jeesh.
Up next, the third Alaska Theater Festival picks up next week with Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, performing all over Juneau in the outdoors for the next couple of weeks. We'll chat with a few actors from the production next. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosis with the Rich Egg Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the moon Enceladus of Saturn. Saturn currently holds the record for the most moons of any of the planets. The count is 145 moons orbiting around Saturn. The second record holder is Jupiter, that currently has a count of 92 moons. That compares to our planet Earth has one moon. Now, most of these moons that orbit Jupiter and Saturn are quite small. And the one I wanted to talk about is the moon Enceladus of Saturn. It's 300 miles in diameter. It's surrounded by an icy crust. Beneath that icy crust is a subsurface ocean of liquid water that's larger in volume than all the oceans of the planet Earth. Now, the reason that there's water so far away from the sun is that the tidal forces of Saturn are great enough to create stress and strain and friction in the interior of Enceladus, which is a high enough heat for liquid water to form. Additionally, plumes are emitted from the cracks in the surface of Enceladus. Those plumes have been seen to erupt up to 10,000 miles above the surface of Enceladus. And when these plumes are analyzed by spectroscopy, they are seen to contain the six elements essential to life as we know it: carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur. There are missions that have been sent to analyze this ocean water beneath the surface of Enceladus to see if life exists there other than life on Earth. This is Steve Kosas with Redirect Planetarium. Our public shows are on our schedule on the website at redirectplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Theater Alaska, founded by Jenny and Flordolino Lagandino, began a few summers back with the first Alaska Theater Festival, with a variety of outdoor performances, including a Shakespeare each summer. The first year was Macbeth. Then last year was A Midsummer Night's Dream. And beginning next week, Twelfth Night, or What You Will, is on the docket. And in this play are some of your favorite actors. And two of them are in the studio joining me now, plus Enrique Bravo.
That's fair.
I had that joke in there, and I wasn't sure I was going to do it, but I had to, because Enrique and I, actually all of the people in the studio and I, all go back. We've all done plays together. So it's a lot of fun to see them all here. It's Christina Apathy, Tom Robinault, and Enrique Bravo. Going to the cheese for you all being here today. Yeah, thanks so much. So, Christina, let's start with you. Will you give us a synopsis of Twelfth Night, or What You Will?
I will try. Twelfth Night begins with a shipwreck, and we have two twins that are separated, Viola and Sebastian. And they wash up in the land of Illyria, and Viola feels... She's a woman, right? She's a woman in this land. And in order to sort of protect herself and make her way, she decides she's going to become a servant in Count Orsino's court. Mm. And so she dresses as a man in order to do that. And Count Orsino has been wooing the Countess Olivia. And so Viola is tasked with those messages, those love messages to Countess Olivia.
The days before texting.
Yes. And Countess Olivia has just lost her father, has lost her brother. Not lost, they've died. And her house is in a bit of chaos. And she has, there's a whole kind of subplot with her uncle, Sir Toby Belch, played by Tom, and Malvolio, her head servant, played by Enrique. And
you're playing Olivia.
I'm playing Olivia.
And Natalia Spengler is playing
Viola.
Viola, right. Okay, great. And we'll maybe hear about the other casts in a minute. So you play Olivia, and you sort of gave us a little rundown of her. Give us a little bit on Sir Toby Belch. Now, this is some of the, I know this is a comedy,
yeah,
right? It's a romantic comedy.
Yes.
But even in the romantic comedy, isn't Toby sort of some of the comedic fodder for the play?
Yeah, he is. He's basically the drunkard of the play.
Typecast.
You can find me downtown, though. To Olivia, and so he's uncle to Olivia, and he's in love with one of Olivia's servants, Mariah. And he has a friend who comes into town who he mooches money off of, and that's Sir Andrew Aguecheek. And so
that's a great name.
It's a great name. And at one point, he calls him Sir Andrew Aguface, which I think is even better.
Shakespeare.
Yeah. So those three kind of pal around, and Malvolio insults Mariah. And so Sir Toby believes that we're going to get a revenge on him. And Mariah comes up with this plot to drop a letter because Malvolio is secretly in love with Olivia. And Mariah knows this. She drops a letter and it is a completely, she writes a lot like Olivia's hand. So it's a love letter that Malvolio discovers. And then all of a sudden he's in love. And then with the three kind of clownish characters plot the rest of the play and kind of mess around with Malvolio the entire time. And he is then put in one scene where he wears yellow stockings that are cross-gartered because in the love letter, that's what Olivia says she would love to see him in.
And wow.
It's pretty great. It's one of, it's very a big attractive. famous scene for Malvolio. Yeah.
That's pretty great. And so it seems like the play is like love triangles, changing identities,
class
like
system.
Class system, yeah. All the different things that are coming to play. We've got
it really does have like a lot of what you find in Shakespeare's plays is kind of combined all in one play.
Yeah.
So you do have you have a great fool, you have these three clowns, and you have the cross-starred lovers, and you have identity issues where you have people dressing as a man or as a woman, so all of that stuff. So you can take like As You Like It, and even like tragical like shows like Macbeth and things like that, and put them all into one thing. It's basically that's
all in one.
Yeah, really is.
I was reading a little bit more about Twelfth Night too, which is like the 12th night after Christmas. Mm-hmm. Mm. And it's a time when masters dressed as servants, servants dressed as their masters. There was like cross-dressing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that going on in the play.
Interesting. Okay, and Enrique, you play Malvolio. We heard a little bit about him, but tell us a little bit more about your character.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've never actually done the show before, so it's been really exciting to kind of get to know it. But he is a servant of Olivia. He's very pious, and I think he sort of revels in that. He kind of feels like he's above everybody in you know, every sense of the word. So I think to see his journey at the beginning, where it's very much he seems like a background character almost, and you know, he's very loyal to Olivia. But yeah, the one thing that sort of sparks his sort of train going is finding this letter and realizing that this thing that he sort of fantasized about, which is, you know, becoming a count by marrying Olivia, might actually come to fruition. So that sort of gets it sort of shifts. It's a giant shift in the play for Malvolio, and it kind of sends things off a different way, which is it's great. It's great to sort of play a character with that sort of giant arch.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now I know many of you have performed a lot of Shakespeare. Have any of you performed all of it or close? Now, Tom, you've directed a lot of Shakespeare right?
Yeah. I think combined directing and acting, I've probably about two-thirds, maybe.
Because there's like, what is it? Is it there 32?
There's 30, let's say 38.
38.
Yeah, okay. Shake 38 is the way to remember that.
Shake 38. Okay,
yeah.
that's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
So you've done about 20-something of them, mm-hmm, over the time?
Yeah.
Because there's some that just never get done, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know,
Troilus and Cressida never gets done.
King John.
Yeah, King John.
Some of those, like Henry VIII, a lot of those don't get done. I was lucky enough to do Henry VI, parts 1, 2, and 3, but those were combined. They cut it all into one play.
Oh,
but that's another one that doesn't get done as often.
Right. Okay. Yeah. What about you, Christina? How much Shakespeare have you done in your day?
Done maybe 4 or 5.
4? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. What about you, Enrique?
I've done a lot. I used to work at a Shakespeare company that was in Rhode Island, and I did like 6 seasons there, and then I also did some back in Austin. So there's shows that I've done multiple times. I've done Romeo and Juliet 3 times. I've done Macker's now, Macbeth for that's what theater nerds call
they never call like Macbeth. To say the full name of the play. Apparently there's a curse, but we're not in a theater, so we're okay.
We're gonna be fine.
We're fine.
I've done that now.
The radio goes off the air right now.
right.
Shakespeare.
So yeah, there's shows that I've done multiple times, but I've done a few. I think Tom's probably the most as far as Shakespeare. I mean, he was working at Fairbank Shakespeare.
You were running that the last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And you also worked back east at
the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey
for 6 years. So you've been involved in a lot of different Shakespeare plays in terms of like probably dramaturgy and digging into them and the histories.
Yeah.
And because there's like the history plays, then there's the comedies, then there's like the tragedies, right?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
A lot of people just break it down as histories, tragedies, and comedies, but some people take some and put them in the romance section too.
Oh, okay.
That's not as well done. so the others. Yeah.
This is the question I have is what is it about the language of Shakespeare that continues to inspire, challenge, and bring us joy through all these years?
I think for me is that, you know, these are stories that are still happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening with everything that Shakespeare wrote about, it's happening now. And Shakespeare was one of the first writers that – there's a book called The Invention of the Human. And he really did, for his time, give three-dimensional worlds for these characters. They weren't just these broad characters. They had thoughts. They had feelings, these soliloquies and monologues of their inner thoughts. And that was one of the first times that a playwright has done that.
Mm.
So I feel like that's a big part of it. And yeah – everything that's going on right now, he wrote about. I mean, it's almost in a way, there's so much in there through his entire canon. It's like you could compare. I'm not saying it is the Bible, but it's kind of like that, where you have so much information and so much written that you can pretty much take any situation and go back into the script and the text and find that and see that it's been done before.
Right.
And that we just keep repeating these stories, and we keep repeating either mistakes, history's mistakes. Or he talks about climate change even. Like, there's all sorts of stuff that he talks about that's actually in the text.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with Tom Robinault, Christina Apathy, and Enrique Bravo, three of the actors who are going to be in Theater Alaska's Alaska Theater. What is it? The Alaska Theater Festival's 12th night, which is beginning next week. Let's get the details out of the way, and then I have a few more questions for you. So it starts – looks like it starts next Wednesday. Is that
yeah.
So a week from about a week from now, this is Thursday, Boston. So Wednesday, July 19th at 7 p.m. And for the first, looks like for the first week, what's cool about Theater Alaska is it's always performed in places throughout the community. So sometimes it's in the library, but most of the time it's outside. And last time I was talking to Flor Delino, the artistic director of the company, I asked him, why did you start a theater company during the pandemic, first of all, and then outdoors? And it was one of the ways to get around being inside was to do theater outside. And you guys have found kind of a home at the Treadwell Mine office building. All the plays have been done there at some point during these festivals. And for the first weekend, it looks like you're there. And then you're going to go all over the place. And for the full schedule, you can go to theater, that's with an ER, theateralaska.org, and they'll have all the places. But you'll be at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library, the Riverside Rotary Park, the new Heritage Plaza downtown at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. I can't wait. I think that's where I go see it, because I think it'd be really cool to see how you're going to do it there. Also going to be out at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. Well, that seems like a lovely – I think you did Midsummer there last year, right? Yeah, because that would be a great place for Midsummer. It just seems to fit that place really well. And then I think the last performance on Sunday, July 30th, you'll be at the Noise Pavilion at the University of Alaska Southeast. Now, here's the great question. Do you need tickets for this?
You do not.
You do not.
All free, Boston.
Free?
Free theater for the people.
However, there is a limit on the Arboretum show. You have to make a reservation for that show, because we had so many people last year that we were it was awesome.
Florlino likes to say, just free theater isn't free. I mean, it does cost a lot of money, so donations are welcome.
Yes, of course. And I'm sure they'll be there with the old way of doing it. It was like passing the hat around on an outdoor performance. So bring a fiver or a tenner and drop it in the hat, right? And enjoy some of this wonderful performance. Christina, can you tell us who else is in the play?
I can. Adara Allen is playing Fabian. Valerie Kissel is playing Mariah. Travis Clark Morris is Orsino. Kristen Rankin is Sir Andrew Aguface. Chris Stahl is Sebastian. And Dan Wayne is Festy. And we've already mentioned everybody else.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about that is, doesn't Shakespeare usually have like a lot of characters in his plays? And how are you getting around it with this small cast?
It does. He does typically, but there are smaller cast plays. This is one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. But there is also there's some doubling of servants to play. I think you play two roles, don't you, Christina?
Yeah, I play a servant in the first couple of scenes.
A countess and a servant.
Yes, I jumped the hierarchy.
Yeah, right.
By the range.
The range. the range. Okay, now I know Tom was talking about this a little bit, but so let's. I wonder, why do Twelfth Night in 2023? What are we saying? Are we setting it in space? Are we, because people sometimes take Shakespeare and they set it in other times. What's the setup for this particular version of Twelfth Night? Is it sort of classic, or what are we doing with
this? This is a modern take of okay. it. It's set in modern times. And yeah, I believe that Florilino's talks a little bit about classist society in a way. Mm. And I think also the kind of gender bending too is also something that's really interesting for right now as well.
Because you have some people playing opposite sex roles, right?
Yeah, but even within the play, it's written that way.
Right.
So
yeah.
And there's a couple of plays that he has like that, like As You Like It and such. So I think that's really interesting to do as well.
And it's fun. It's funny. Is it a little campy here and there too?
It can be.
We were talking about this play in particular can go from like, you know, a drama to Looney Tunes in like no time.
Right.
Yeah. So it's that's what's cool to have like the clowns and such. Yeah. And then you've got Duke Orsino, who's so in love that he's just so, you know, heartbroken and all this, and goes straight to comedy, right? The scene right after that. So it's got a good balance.
That's cool. And how are we, because we're moving locations, we just mentioned all the different locations you're going to be. How are we setting the scenes in each of these locales for this exotic setting of Illyria?
That's seriously, I think, the thing that people don't realize about doing shows the way we do them, because that first week, I mean, it's nice to have a very specific space that we know. We have four walls. We know exactly where all our entrances and exits are going to be. But it does become very interesting the next sort of week when we're moving and having to adjust blocking left and right base. I mean, we've moved to a gym. We've moved. The Arboretum was crazy because there was probably close to 200 plus people there. So the width of the stage became probably about 20 feet wide. It was nuts. I mean, it really takes actors that are very flexible in that regard, that can kind of be like, just roll the punches. It's like, this is where the entrance is going to be. This is where the exit is going to be. You're finding that out a lot as you go.
And that's
which is kind of exciting.
Yeah. And that's how it used to be done.
Yeah.
That,
right.
A group of players that would go from town to town and put on a show. They talk about it in Hamlet, the tragedians that come to Hamlet's place and do a show. They don't know what it's going to look like. They just know the show well enough that they can adjust to each place.
I see. So you just kind of know, like, I'm going to come in from the right somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. They don't
between
really know
these
where.
Two people in the audience. Yeah, right.
And are you doing, when you change from the Treadwell office building, will you then go to the space like a few hours before on each day? Or are you doing it the day before? Or how are you all doing that?
That's the goal. I mean, I think he said we're trying to at least touch the space once before we actually perform there.
Yeah.
The how realistic that is, we'll see.
But what is it? But doesn't it do something to you as actors to like be sort of? You have to be very present.
Yes,
it's very alive.
Oh, yeah.
Like for the audience and for the actors,
and keeps you on your toes.
It really does. But also, I mean, there's something about that because because you're so sort of involved with the audience. I like to say you can't really fake it when you're that close, you know?
Right.
They'll see it. So, I mean, there was literally a time in Macbeth where I was reaching over somebody's shoulder to grab a prop that I needed. I was just like, excuse me, I'm just going to grab that dagger.
I need that dagger that's hanging in the air. I need that.
What's that scary man doing behind me? That murderer.
Is there ever any opportunity to involve the audience in something like that? I guess it would depend on the play, right? To use them as fodder for some of the scenes or something?
Well, for the last 2 years, we've definitely built in a movement for the audience, and I think that's worked well a couple times, just because it's been so cold, so people want to move, but also just I think it helps make it a little more interactive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, speaking of working outdoors and all of that, because at Treadwell you have the office building, you get some inside. I know last year with Midsummer they went outside for like the second act, and so that was really fun for the audience to have to move and get uncomfortable and move around and stuff, so that's kind of cool. But what are some of the joys and or challenges of performing outside beyond the rain?
Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes. Okay.
Well, and also like a lot of times, kind of like what we're doing and a lot of stuff that happens at FST, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, and a lot of outdoor theaters, is you really rely on the language, because you said how is this, you know, how are we bringing the world of Illyria? Well, it's through the language. Mm-hmm. There's really no other way to do it. It's through the text. And so that is something that I think is pretty magical to have, especially for an actor.
As Shakespeare, as you know, as you study him, or even if you don't perform it, but in school you study it and you realize the way he writes, right? Like mm-hmm. for your voice, because I think with outside, I mean, Christina, you're a voice person, voice trained person. Like outside, sometimes, well, I know, but you know what I'm saying? Like you've taught voice sometimes. So like the idea that you're outside and you have to worry about, you know, projection or whatever, and isn't it sometimes in the language where he's got like the vowels for certain things to help you get that across, yeah. right?
Yeah. It's written for the breath.
Yeah.
And more so than probably any other playwright.
Right.
Shakespeare too was written for the outdoors. It was written for a thrust. And you can kind of tell once you study it long enough that
what is a thrust for our audience?
For a thrust, a three-course, so it's like audiences, it's like a horseshoe in a way, but it's like audiences on three sides of the
okay.
stage.
Okay, as yeah. opposed to like just flat, like yeah, a Juno Douglas High School yeah. or something.
Seems
like that.
Great for musicals, but for Shakespeare, it should almost always be done on a thrust.
But I'll also say, I mean, there was some growing pains too. I mean, we tried to do Macbeth at the Well, which in theory sounds amazing, right? People want to come to the Well. And then you realize the fountain went off seven times. There was planes flying. Flying over, plus the traffic, like, and there's nothing to bounce sound off of. So if you realize the second year, we did not go back to the Well.
Right. So there are certain spaces that are a little bit more appropriate right. for these performances outside than others. Now, is it difficult to perform in the rain? I know that in Macbeth, the first year, you guys were performing in rain a lot.
I think it could be. I think that was also a growing pain. We realized we needed bigger sort of canopies to like hide under. I think what we've figured out is that most of the spaces, with the exception of the Arboretum, have coverage for the actors and the audience. So now we just keep it everyone's under some sort of surface that covers us.
Well, it sounds amazing. It sounds like it's going to be a fun couple of weeks. You're going into your final weekend of rehearsals, so break a leg on that. Again, go to theater with an ER, alaska.org. You can find out all the information and the dates. It starts next Wednesday at Treadwell Mine Office Building. There'll be there for the first week, and then the second week, they're going to be all over Juno, really, everywhere. All these wonderful performers, and it's free. So get outside, enjoy some Shakespeare, have some laughs, right?
Right.
And enjoy these actors like working their little tails off to entertain you. And hopefully it won't be raining on them. Right. So appreciate it. Tom Robinault, Christina Apathy, Enrique Bravo, thanks for coming in today. Really appreciate
Thank it.
Thank you. Thanks,
Boston. Yeah, Gwyneth Jeege. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific Thursday. Tomorrow's show, a chat with Wayne Stevens, who is retiring from the United Way of Alaska. The CBJ Clerk's Office will give us the lowdown on how to get registered to run for office. And Southeast Alaska Independent Living will be here to chat about Disability Pride Month. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road! Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.